Good morning. Welcome to WGTD's Community Matters. I'm Laura Sumner Kuhn, your host, and I'm delighted this morning to have with me as a guest Anthony Lococo, who's the Deputy Counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. We will call for short, Will. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming to us. You have quite an interesting case that you're handling that quite a number of institutions in Racine. And so that is the reason that you're here with us this morning. It has to do with the orders that were issued by Daddy Dorsak, who's the Racine public health officer, and also the closing of a number of private schools. And as we get into the discussion of this case that you're handling, I want listeners to know it's a little complex case that you'll be reeling out for us, but also to know that I also have had some connections with some of the parties in this case. I have worked with the School Choice Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Council of Religious and Independent Schools and a number of private schools in Racine, and they are all involved at some to some extent in the case that you're handling. So I just want our listeners to know that. But I'm going to leave the explanation to you, Anthony, to kind of take us through this really interesting issue. So if you would just kind of start with the explanation of what is happening.
Sure, I'm happy to do that. So really this whole situation began in mid to late August, not in the city of Racine, but in Dane County, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, with which we're all very familiar. The Dane County Public Health Department decided to close private schools and public schools in the county to in-person instruction. And in our view, that's not authority that the Wisconsin statutes grant to local health officers like Public Health Madison and Dane County. And full disclosure, Will is also involved in this Dane County case. And so on August 26, petitioners in that case sued Public Health Madison and Dane County directly in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, saying, number one, this isn't authority that Dane County has. They can't close schools, in particular private schools, to in-person instruction. And number two, even if they did have that authority, it violates our rights, parents' rights, schools' rights, to the free exercise of religion and to direct the education and upbringing of children. And on September 10th, the Supreme Court granted that original action and issued a preliminary ruling enjoining Dane County's order. And there's an important piece of that, which is in order to issue that preliminary ruling, the Supreme Court had to find that the petitioners were likely to succeed in their argument. And the court agreed that it was likely that local health officers do not have the authority to close schools. Now, that case was argued on December 8th, and it's still pending. And so I'll take a break from Dane County now and go to the city of Racine. And that's where this case that we're going to be discussing began. On November 12th, while all this was going on, the city of Racine health officer issued its own school closure order. This was after the Wisconsin Supreme Court had put the Dane County order on hold. And in our view, you know, this wasn't really a good way for things to be proceeding. The Supreme Court had already issued a preliminary ruling. And you know, whether schools are open or closed shouldn't depend on who happens to get to the courthouse first. But the injunction that the court had issued really only applied to Dane County. So on behalf of a number of private schools, parents, and associations that you've mentioned, School Choice Wisconsin Action and the Wisconsin Council of Religious and Independent Schools, we filed a new original action saying, look, Wisconsin Supreme Court, there's not much work for you to do here. You should enjoin Racine's order for the same reason you did in the Dane County case. And on November 25th, the court did so. And it said, we're going to put Racine's order on hold and we'll decide it after we decide the Dane County case. So I'm happy to get into the more recent actions that have been occurring in that case, but that's sort of the background for where we are right now.
Right, and kind of at the heart, maybe we can kind of zero in before we get to the whole schedule of things that have happened since that time. Maybe you can get to some of the heart of why this is so concerning for the people you're representing to begin with. It's a matter of they feel their constitutional rights. Am I correct about that?
That's correct. Constitutional rights. And also, you know, it's important that the statutes that have been enacted to address emergencies like COVID-19 are complied with. You know, nobody is disputing in these cases that COVID-19 presents a serious public health challenge. It needs to be addressed. It should be addressed. But it needs to be addressed within the limits of the law. You know, this is a nation of laws. We don't abandon those laws even when emergencies arise because they provide important protections, important checks on the exercise of governmental power. And so, you know, while COVID-19 certainly caught everyone by surprise, what the legislature did know in advance is that emergencies would be arising. And it developed plans in advance to address those emergencies. And what the legislature decided was that the power to issue blanket school closure orders, if it resides anywhere, resides with the State Department of Health Services. And again, you don't have to take my word for that. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has already ruled in issuing its preliminary injunction that that is likely to be the case. So, no, I guess the first piece of this is that, in our view, the Racine public health officer is disregarding Wisconsin statutes. But then, as you point out, separate from this question of statutory authority is the question of these important constitutional rights, these critical constitutional rights, one of those being the right of parents to direct the education and upbringing of their children. Now, this is actually, even though it's not a right that gets talked about a whole lot, it's one of the oldest constitutional rights recognized by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has repeatedly emphasized the importance of this right. And in our view, whenever you're issuing an order like this one, closing private schools, telling parents you can't choose to send your kids to the school that you'd like, you have to have a really, really good reason for doing that. It's what lawyers call, you have to survive strict scrutiny. You have to show the court that you have a compelling interest and that you're addressing that interest in a way that is very, very sensitive to the rights of parents. And unfortunately, Racine's order is not sensitive. Racine has left open retail establishments. It's left open restaurants. It's left open institutes of higher education. It's left open hotels. It's left open tattoo parlors. Schools are really being, in a sense, singled out here. And in our view, that's not permitted. And if you'll allow me, I'll just talk a little bit more about the second constitutional claim that's at issue, the free exercise claim. And that's basically the idea of religious liberty. A lot of these parents are sending their kids to a private religious school for religious reasons. The kids receive religious instruction there. They might receive sacraments there or attend chapel service. They might receive, you know, counseling from a priest or other minister. All of these things are being put on hold by the Racine order. And, you know, again, it's not to say that that can never be done, but if it is done, then the governmental actor that's doing it has to have a extremely compelling justification, and it has to enact its order with sensitivity to those rights. And again, we're not really questioning the compelling interest here, but the order is just haphazard, and it ignores the fact that these schools, for example, have adopted meticulous hygiene, cleaning, and protective measure policy. So that's really a summary of the claims that are at issue in the case.
I think it would do us good to talk a little bit more about those distinctions that you've drawn so far. And to me, it sounds as though the state, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, has the ability to close schools. And in fact, with Governor Tony Evers' issue earlier this year, schools were closed in March when the whole world began to realize how serious COVID is. And statutorily, the state had the right and responsibility to close schools at that time as they chose to do. And there was a fine definition of what is essential and what isn't, and a distinction drawn between what was necessary to keep people alive and well and living. You know, they still needed to get groceries and whatnot, and what we might think were a little more risky ventures. And even that was challenged. But you're kind of drawing for us the contrast between the powers of the state in that case, and then a little later when the city acted, right? Can you tell us any more about the differences between those two things?
That's right. I mean, these are really, I think everyone will agree that the question of closing down schools is, it's a policy question on which reasonable people might disagree, but nobody would disagree that it's an important question. I mean, the stakes could not be higher. We're talking about our kids' education, their mental health, their access to religious activities and many other things. So, you know, the legislature got together and in its, you know, collective wisdom representing the people of the state of Wisconsin had to decide, well, what should we do when there's an emergency? And so, you know, while people might debate the system that the legislature adopted, the fact is that that's what the law says, and they've given the power, they've decided, you know, we don't want to necessarily have this important question being decided by an unelected local level bureaucrat sitting at their computer at night. We want this to be taken to a higher level. If it's not going to be done by the legislature, it's going to be done by the Department of Health Services, which is a member of the governor's executive branch. So, you know, I think that's sort of the distinction that the legislature drew. And again, whether or not people want to debate the wisdom of it, that's one thing, but the law is the law and it needs to be complied with.
So why don't you bring to where we are today, and maybe we can start with update and backtrack a little bit. Are students at these private schools today attending school in person?
So the schools are not free to open right now. And this is really where the case took an unfortunate turn, even more unfortunate turn. As we left it off, the Wisconsin Supreme Court on November 25th, which was the day before Thanksgiving, concluded that, again, the petitioners in the Racine case were likely to succeed on their argument that the Department of Health Services had the power to close schools, not local health officers. And it issued that injunction, putting Racine's order on hold. Well, that same night, shortly after the decision was issued, the Racine Public Health Administrator issued an email was sent on her behalf informing schools, hello, everybody. This order came out from the Wisconsin Supreme Court, but just so you know, you're still shut down. And as you can imagine, this caused a great deal of confusion. I was confused myself. And as it's turned out, what Racine's position is that, you know, the state statutes are one thing, but there's a separate ordinance enacted by the Common Council in Racine that Racine says gives it the power to close schools. Now, there are a number of problems with this argument. Number one, as even a non-lawyer knows, an ordinance can't override a duly enacted state statute by the legislature. And as we've already discussed, the power to close schools is placed in the Department of Health Services. But even more fundamentally, if you look at the ordinance, there's nothing in there that actually closes schools. So in other words, what the public health administrator, Dottie K. Bowersox, did was, after the order was enjoined by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, she simply issued a new one. She simply issued what is amounts to the same order with a different date on it. And so schools had to make the untenable choice between not enjoying the relief granted them by the highest court in the state, or, you know, disobeying an order of a local health officer. And as I mentioned, it's just not really a tenable situation. So what we had to do, something that we didn't relish doing, but we went back into court on November 30th and filed a motion to hold the public health administrator and her department in contempt of court. And what that means essentially is, in our view, they are disobeying an order of the court. They are not complying with an order of the court. And so we asked the court to impose what are called remedial sanctions, essentially a punishment, financial and otherwise, until the respondents, until the Racine complies with the court order. So that finished briefing on December 14th, and we are now in a waiting period for the court to rule on that. And unfortunately, you know, schools are closed until then.
In her new order, was there discussion of fines that the schools would have to pay if they defied her second order?
Yes and no. So we were told by counsel for the respondents that the city intended to enforce its ordinance, and the ordinance itself, while not discussing the closure of schools, again, it's just a broad grant of authority, it contains penalties for violations, financial forfeitures.
So I can't even imagine how the schools had to handle communication during the last few weeks, right? You're about to head off to a four-day weekend with Thanksgiving, having just gone through this turmoil of events about understanding that your children will not be able to come back to school until mid-January because of the first order of the city. I'm preparing all of the parents and the students. How many students are we talking about that are affected by this order? Do you know what that would be, Anthony?
I'm sorry, I don't have those numbers. I mean, it would be, you know, every student essentially in at a K-12 school in the city of Racine.
Right. So I'm thinking a couple of thousand at least.
Certainly.
Of students who are now learning that they're not going to go back until well after the holiday season in the middle of January in 2021. And then they learn, well, wait, we have an injunction and we'll be able to continue as we had planned to do to finish out the semester, and many semesters end in mid-January. So to finish out the semester as we had planned. But then all of a sudden you have the second order on the eve of Thanksgiving, after you've just informed all of your parents about, hooray, we're going to continue coming to school, and now you have to tell them, no, you're not, or make the decision to defy the order. Do you have any, can you share with us what that decision was like among school leaders? Were you privy to any of those discussions with them about what ramifications this had for them or their parents?
So what I can say is, you know, it's very easy for a single government official sitting in their office to issue new orders left and right. You know, it's like a cold, hot water tap. It is not the same way for opening and closing schools. It is not the same way for parents, for example, maybe in a dual income household, who now have to find childcare or change their work schedule. You know, it's not the same way for teachers and staff who plan to come into the building and now can't and now can and now can't. It's just, this is why we don't live by government dictate. You know, the latest order that gets released from our local health department. These things get debated, statutes get duly enacted, and we follow them. And you know, there should be some regularity to things. There should be an opportunity for public notice and for public comment. So, you know, I don't want to get too deep into too close to attorney-client privilege areas, but you know, it's been a very, very difficult experience for a number of schools and parents and children and staff in the area. And you know, that's why we really made the difficult decision to go back to the Wisconsin Supreme Court and file this motion for contempt, because the court granted relief, and these families are owed that relief.
What for your clients, which would be all of the private schools and the parents that use them, what would be the best possible outcome at this juncture? Because here we are about a week away, from Christmas, as many of those schools celebrate Christmas. They're mostly Christian schools, many of them. And then they have their regular holiday enacted, and then they would come back a little after in that first week of January. What's the best possible outcome given where we are in the calendar right now and all of the decisions that have to fall out of this in order to fully remedy the situation?
Sure. And I think what you're getting at here is, you know, the order expires January 15th. So Racine really seems to have gotten what it wanted, doesn't it? And so, you know, I think that sort of highlights how egregious their actions have been since the court's issuance of the injunction. But, you know, I can tell you that the best case scenario, these schools still want to open. These parents still want to send their kids to school, even if we're talking about a short period of time before the order expires. I mean, our parents feel strongly that virtual instruction is no substitute for in-person instruction. They feel strongly that it's important that their kids be able to engage in in-person religious exercise with their classmates and parents and their classmates and their teachers. They feel strongly that their children are able to attend school safely. And so for all these reasons, I think the best case scenario here is that the court comes back soon and says, look, we meant what we said. This order is on hold and these schools are free to open. And then we can get the kids back in the classroom as soon as we can. And I'll just add one last thing to that. You know, even though the order expires on January 15th, I still think this case is going to be a live issue because, you can see how easy it is, how quickly public health administrators can act. They just have to sign a piece of paper and send it out. So the Racine Public Health Department could very easily decide it wants to extend the order or it wants to issue a new one in the spring or the summer. And so I think these are issues that need to get resolved.
Rarely are there cases such as this that don't have long-lasting ramifications down the line as it relates to other things. As, you know, deputy counsel for a public interest law firm, what kinds of other decisions do you think are related to whatever happens in this case? Are there other things happening in the state or even around the country where you can see implications for whichever way the court decides on this issue?
Sure. So, I mean, this is something, this 2020 has been a very interesting year for public interest litigators. We'll just put it that way. I mean, the school orders are one thing. You're also seeing similar orders as they pertain to businesses, as they pertain to churches. And in some sense, it's really sort of been a stress test for how well our system protects individual liberty. And you don't just see cases coming up at the Wisconsin Supreme Court, although there have been a few. You're seeing this nationwide. I mean, you know, our state litigation counterparts in other states are facing similar issues. Your listeners may have seen some cases that have come up at the United States Supreme Court, for example, relating to the closure of churches. So, you know, the narrow statutory question of who has the authority to close schools, you know, that's one issue. But, you know, the larger issue related to the constitutional rights of parents, their right to free exercise, their right to direct the education of children, I mean, those are rulings, as you say, that establish precedents that you know, they carry on for a long time.
I think too, however, I think to play devil's advocate, you know, if you are an elected official, in this case, the local health official is not an elected person, but just to extrapolate from this case, if you were an elected official, and as we've learned from this time of COVID, faced with the dilemma of how do I preserve the health and well-being of the people for whom I'm responsible and who I represent, and at the same time, how do I ensure that their freedoms are preserved? That's a huge tension. That's a huge balance. Are there times when you feel, from your experience in looking at these cases that have been related to this, where it's absolutely, you could say these are the values or the qualities or the instances that we look for when somebody exercises in order to close things down, so that it, you know, because we realize that that is a dilemma. They have a responsibility to keep the public safe and yet, you know, preserve their freedom.
And I'll just repeat that, you know, we certainly don't discount the seriousness of the COVID-19 pandemic. And as you say, it raises some very difficult questions. I don't envy the public officials who have to make some of these decisions. But, you know, all public officials, I think what we all want to see is real humility about the power that they are wielding. And, you know, a willingness to, when, for example, in this case, when that power resides somewhere else, a willingness to acknowledge that to acknowledge one's own limitations. And, you know, I really don't have a whole lot of sympathy for the Racine Public Health Administrator in this case, because their department had the benefit of the Dane County proceeding. They watched that go up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. They listened to the Wisconsin Supreme Court rule. Wisconsin Supreme Court said, we think this is in the Dane County Health, this power resides in the Department of Health Services. And yet they acted anyway. And so, you know, I don't discount that in some cases we can have an appreciation for the difficult questions that are being faced by these officials, but this is not one of them.
Again, just to kind of bring up, since we don't have the benefit of having Racine officials on the show this morning, I would say, is there an exception that you would think of when perhaps the state, yes, might have the overall power, but really maybe does not understand the severity of what might be happening in a particular location in the state as contrasted with another, like, you know, Racine has had fairly high numbers of COVID cases all through this pandemic, and more so in the last couple of months compared to perhaps Dane County, which didn't seem to have experienced such a rapid upswing in cases or as many cases initially. Is there any argument to be made for the different experiences in geography that might have somebody conclude that this even though they could see what was happening in Dane County, that maybe the thinking was something was different here?
I would say no, in the sense that the facts are not really relevant to what the statute provides. I mean, you either have the authority or you don't, no matter how bad the facts may be. So in this particular case, I don't think that the difference in facts is really a justification. We have to trust the holders of that authority to exercise it for the benefit of Wisconsinites. And, you know, I'll just say, it's not as though there aren't other systems built in as protection. So, for example, Governor Evers had a 60-day period at the beginning of this pandemic to act according to what is really extraordinary authority that the statutes grant him. And of course, local health officers aren't entirely without power either. But again, in this case, in this narrow question of the closure of schools, we have to allow the state Department of Health Services to be the one to address it.
What's the next step for you as you're waiting for the court to make a decision?
So I would say, in a sense, there's really two focuses here. The first, of course, being what we've discussed, the contempt motion. That could get ruled on any day. And the second, of course, is the Dane County case, which got started earlier. It's already been argued December 8th. I have a feeling the court appreciates the high stakes of the case, whether schools can be opened or not. So sort of waiting for the court to issue its ruling on those two questions. And once the Dane County case is decided, we'll have a conversation about that decision's effect on Racine.
And just out of curiosity, I hadn't asked this question. Are those Dane County schools in session in person right now?
Yes, that order is on hold.
Well, I appreciate your spelling out this case for us, and it's just one of the many public interest cases that Will undertakes in its mission. I wonder if you could spend just a little time telling us a little about what Will, as a public interest law office, does. I think that's kind of an anomaly to what people think of when it comes to law practice. Maybe you could explain a little bit about what Will's mission is and how you attempt to carry it out.
Sure, I'm happy to do that. You know, it's always a little dangerous when you ask a lawyer to talk about himself or herself, but I'm happy to go ahead. So Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, as you mentioned, it's a nonprofit public interest law firm. We don't charge for any of our legal services, and we litigate in specific issue areas like free speech, religious liberty, the rule of law. As you can imagine, those are all things that have come up quite a bit during the COVID-19 pandemic. And, you know, just more generally, it's our mission to make sure that we have good government that works for us, that respects the rights of its citizens. So, you know, we take a wide variety of cases. Certainly this year, a lot of them have had to do with COVID-19. We also do some work, for example, with election integrity. We do some work with respect to maybe some tax issues and that kind of thing. But really, if it relates to government acting the way that it should or unfortunately the way that it shouldn't, it's something that we have an interest in doing. And because we don't charge, we're able to offer assistance to people who otherwise might not be able to afford it.
Is there any landmark case that you think kind of is a signature case of what Will has been able to accomplish? It's still a fairly young organization. Is that not right?
That's correct. We're fairly young. Will's been around for about a decade. And you know, we have a lot of cases that I like to reference. You know, for example, one of my favorites that got a bit of press was representing Polly Olson, who was a student at the Northeast Wisconsin Technical College, who had a practice of handing out Valentines on Valentine's Day, was told she couldn't do that. And we brought a First Amendment claim and won that. And she regained the ability to wish people Happy Valentine's Day. Another one that your listeners might be familiar with is the McAdams case, which related to the discipline of a Marquette University professor. And that was something related to academic freedom and the ability of professors, you know, to exercise that ability. So I think those are two of the cases for which we're best known. But, you know, we're always taking on newcomers, and hopefully we'll have some more landmarks to come in the future.
Well, Anthony, I really appreciate your time with me this morning and your dedication to explain to our listeners kind of the background of this case and actually what it means for both the people you represent and all of us in communities around the state as we struggle with those issues of liberty and freedom and also safety and protection. So I thank you for your time, and I hope that perhaps you'll come back to us once we learn of the decision in the courts and learn a little bit more about the thinking behind it.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you.